Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Tuesday, December 2nd, 2014, and I'm Leanne McAdoo. Here are tonight's top stories.
Tonight,
I sold abortions to other women. Our goal was 3 to 5 abortions from every woman between the ages of 13 and 18.
And when Oathkeeper volunteers did what police refused to do, that is, protect life and property, the police ordered them to leave. Now they're challenging the unlawful order in court. All that and more on tonight's InfoWars Nightly News.
The family of the Bosnian man who was brutally murdered in St. Louis early Sunday morning are demanding that hate crime charges be filed. And this is even while police are continuing to insist that this attack was not racially motivated. This is despite eyewitness accounts and an attack on a second Bosnian. Now, this is 32-year-old Zemir Begic. He was killed while trying to protect his wife from 4 teenagers who were armed with hammers in St. Louis. Now, according to one eyewitness, individuals were heard running up and down the street yelling, F the white people, kill the white people. And this was immediately before the attack. Murder charges have already been filed against one suspect, but the family believes that Begic was targeted because he was white. Another Bosnian man reported being attacked by the same gang earlier in the night, but he was able to fight off the gang, suffering only cuts to his hands and neck. But instead of calling it a hate crime, they just want to victim blame, and they say Begic was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So notice how they never said that when Mike Brown was in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's like telling someone whose house got destroyed by a tornado that they shouldn't have built their house there. So, of course, it just appears to be another attempt to downplay possible racial motivations behind this attack. So the family is saying that this is obviously not a random attack. You've got eyewitness accounts saying this is related to what was going on in Ferguson. The cops, despite all that, are reluctant to call this a hate crime. And, of course, so is the media. They won't even point out the ethnicity of the attackers. Basically, the first reports that were being filed are just saying teen suspects and juveniles. And many people took to Twitter as well, questioning why the media failed to highlight the race of the suspects, as it is so keen to do when black people are the victims of violence. Now, we pointed that out here before as well, that it's not a hate crime if the person is white, and they won't point that out. They'll just kind of say it's a suspect and this and that. But when they want to be able to control the narrative of the race war, that's what this is all about, is just being able to inflame just the one side that you really want to get riled up. The Obama administration wants to show that he's really supporting this side. And so, of course, the media isn't going to highlight a different hate crime when it doesn't fit into their agenda of inciting this race war. And, of course, what that is get the one side riled up so that the other side demands for police protection and more protection. So basically, we're all getting played. Now, Ferguson police chief is saying that a lot of discussion is going around about whether or not to charge Brown's stepfather with inciting a riot. Now, he was caught on video last week screaming at protesters to burn this bleep down following the decision not to indict Officer Darren Wilson. And Chief Thomas Jackson says that he could be charged with inciting a riot. He says violent agitators will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Now, of course, all of that happened in the heat of the moment. I said it at the time that that was completely wrong. Here you have the cameras shoved in the family's face, who didn't hear about the grand jury decision before the rest of the world. So here you have him. He's upset, you know, rightly so. What about the prosecutor? Is he going to be charged with inciting a riot? He was the one that decided to drag out the results, even though the results came in around noon. He dragged it out till 8 p.m. Everyone said, why would you do that? Ratcheting up the tension of all these people standing there, thousands of people standing, waiting for hours, and then wait, of course, until it's under the cloak of darkness when you have zero ability to do crowd control. It's clear to everyone looking in from the outside that that was the perfect scenario for starting a riot. So what about the prosecutor? Or what about Al Sharpton, who Obama invites to the White House to give him advice on all of this. And MSNBC gives him his own show where he can have his own platform to do his race baiting. He's the ultimate riot insider. And then, of course, there is Louis Farrakhan.
Listen, listen, watch, watch now, because once it starts, it's on. You may not want to fight, but you better get ready. Teach your baby how to throw the bottle if they can't bite.
But no, they don't want to come after the people that are clearly stoking the fires of racial tension. They want to come after the people that are actually there helping to protect the people of Ferguson. Okay, so joining me now is Sam Andrews there, Oath Keeper in Ferguson. So what's going on there in Ferguson? We're getting some different stories that the cops there were kicking you off the rooftops. The residents are saying, please stay. What's the real deal?
Well, the real deal is we have a unconstitutional police chief named Belmer who's ordering his men to harass us in an unconstitutional way. They're trying to intimidate us. Of course, they can't. You know, it's impossible to intimidate the quality of people we brought in here. And so we're just kind of laughing and saying, yeah, whatever, you know, mosey on down the road. You know, you don't belong here. You're on private property. And they're saying, come down from the roofs, show us your ID. If you don't show us your ID, we're going to arrest you. And we're like, okay, arrest us. Here's our ID. What are you going to do? You're illegally asking me for my ID. And some of us showed our IDs and some of us didn't show our IDs and they didn't make any arrests. So obviously it's this big intimidation tactic.
And the residents there, what has been the response initially when you all first arrived and now a few days later? They're seeing how vital your presence is in the community.
Well, initially, they were calling my men the KKK and the police and saying F you and all that stuff. But we got down on the street and we told them who we were and why we were there and that we respect their right to protest. And we don't approve of unconstitutional behavior by the police or unlawful behavior by the police. And we also don't approve of people damaging the businesses and burning buildings down. And we're here to protect everybody's rights. And all of a sudden, they were like, you're here for us. We love you. And they kept saying that over and over and over again. Some of the girls would cry, realizing, they say, we thought you were here to kill us. We thought you were the police. We said, no, we're here to everybody. That's just not true. We love everybody.
Right. I bet that was a really powerful moment there for them to see that there are people there that are on their side. I know we were getting a lot of comments. Oh, the Oath Keepers went out to the Bundy Ranch. Why aren't they in Ferguson? They should be in Ferguson. And you are there. And that's actually your hometown. And you rallied the troops, basically, to come there and help protect these people that aren't able to protect themselves. Now they're asking you to help stay and protect them from the police.
Well, not only are they asking us to stay, more businesses are asking us, do you have more men? Can you guard our business, too? And so, I mean, the business owners don't want us to leave. They told the police and the National Guard, we don't want you on our building and we don't want you on our property. We want these people guarding us. You guys failed us. These guys have not failed us.
Wow, and that's incredible. And I know initially they were saying that the issue was that you all didn't have a license or something to be security there. You weren't licensed to be security, but that only pertains to people who aren't there voluntarily. And now talk to me a little bit about what you guys are doing to help protect these buildings from arsonists.
Well, let me say this. Let me answer this charge about volunteers having to have a license.
Mm-hmm.
The day the government wants to tax people for helping their neighbor is the day we need a new government.
Right.
That is absolutely insane that they want to tax, regulate, and license you helping your neighbor.
Right. That if a person can't afford a private security detail, then they just need to watch as their business burns down.
That's exactly the message. If you can't afford to pay for my off-duty police officers or my plan, if you can't pay for your own private security, well, you certainly can't count on the governor doing the right thing because he left the people of Ferguson to burn Monday night. There was a plan in place that the lower-level police agency chiefs had approved that had National Guard on South Florissant and on West Florissant. And 2 weeks before this grand jury release, the feds came in and convinced and the Highway Patrol and Nixon, they changed the plan and pulled all the guard out of Ferguson and put them in Clayton and downtown where their big money constituents were and left the people of Ferguson to burn. And that is criminal negligence. There's nothing short of criminal negligence there.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what it looked like to all of us as we knew that the National Guard was called in. We knew that they were there ready to do whatever. We weren't sure. And then as the grand jury decision is handed down and then the night went on and all the arson and looting was taking place, we're like, well, where's the National Guard? They're standing way back. They're not even there protecting the firefighters who were getting shot at and things like that. So obviously there was a real need for some protection there for these people who weren't getting it from the police or the National Guard.
This thing, this whole situation is as dirty as it can be. Nixon needs to resign. Bellmer needs to resign. The Department of Justice and the FBI need to get out of Ferguson, get the feds out of there, and let the people of this community heal. This is terrible that these people were so negligent and so antagonistic in this situation. It's criminal behavior.
Now, I know you said you were working on something here. What's happening today? What do you see happening here in the coming days?
Well, we've had two calm nights without protests, without arsons, just an occasional drive-by shooter. And that, the local officers, who are good guys, say that, you know, that's pretty normal for Ferguson, nothing horribly out of line. We're hoping for a third good night, and I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't really tell you.
And you're heading to file an injunction?
Yes, right now.
Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Or?
Yeah, it's about this ridiculous harassment of our people by the St. Louis County Police. And we're going to have an attorney file an injunction to keep them off this property. They don't belong here. They have no right or authority to be on private property IDing people that haven't committed a crime.
Right. And they're telling you that. So it's kind of they're doing the exact same thing. They're pointing their finger at you all for doing.
Well, here's the message I want to send to everybody. I want everybody in the country to think about this, okay? If I got the same guy, an Army guy, Special Forces, who's defending America overseas, he's called a hero. That same man comes back to the U.S. He works for private security guarding a big network like CNN or ABC. And then on his day off, he comes to Ferguson and helps us guard these small businesses. Now he's a right-wing radical.
Right.
It's the same guy.
Right, and that's exactly it. You should be hailed as heroes there. And I know you're bringing a constitutional message there to the people of Ferguson. You know, they're getting it from all different angles of people telling them, you know, they've got to, you know, join the Democrats or go with the Communist Party. It's the only way. And so they're getting all these groups that are coming in to help. You all are just there bringing some constitutional truth and justice and protection to the people there of Ferguson. Just doing what your job. You swore an oath to do this job.
It boils down to this. These liars and manipulators don't want to recognize the heart of a servant, which is what these people that are securing this area the right way are doing. They're serving their fellow citizens, and they don't want to recognize the true heart of a servant. And when you ask these national media folks, well, the same guy that was guarding ABC three nights ago is up on my roof volunteering. Why is he only a right-wing extremist when he's on the roof and he's when he's dragging your butt out of a hot zone, somehow he's a hero?
Right.
There's conflict there you haven't resolved.
Right. That is an excellent point and something that we really need to strive, because they try to push that narrative all the time, this right-wing extremism, and you guys are heroes. And I guess the people of Ferguson are definitely seeing that side of the spin that the media tries to put on the Oath Keepers. So regardless of what the Obama administration and the media is telling you about what's happening in Ferguson, this is more than just about race. This is about abuse of police authority, the blue privilege, and are blacks and minorities targeted indiscriminately more so by police than their white counterparts? Absolutely. No one can deny those statistics. Now, New York is prepping for riots as a grand jury decision is supposed to be coming down sometime very soon. in the Eric Garner case. Now, this is a man who was clearly killed by the cops. It's caught on camera. They choked him to death for the crime of selling cigarettes individually. I mean, that's why they were talking to this man in the first place. And of course, the chokehold was exacerbated by the fact that the man had asthma. Now, unfortunately, the racial component of this murder is just going to feed into this race war hysteria. It fits the whole agenda of this race war, but it's paving over the larger issue, which is an out of control, federally militarized police state. It affects all citizens. The police state is at war with all citizens. All races in the U.S. are suffering from police brutality. Now, play a little snippet of this video. This is a video that's quickly gone viral. It's called "This Is What Happens When You Call the Cops."
This is what happens when you call the cops. Come on. This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
This video shows that it has no boundary of race, creed, or gender. It captures the resentment that is bubbling beneath the surface. And anyone who thinks that this is just a race issue better open their eyes, because the abuse has no limits. So the nation should be coming together, unifying over these issues, purging the government of corruption, and bringing some much needed justice to this country. That is what was happening in the beginning days there of Ferguson. And that is the need for this race war, because as long as the country is divided, we can't come together and purge the corruption from this country. That is the reason for the divide and conquer tactic of left versus right, black versus white. It's two sides of the same coin. Either way, we're getting played, and the race war is a trap.
They organize nonviolent resistance is the most powerful weapon that oppressed people can use in breaking loose from the bondage of oppression. Now, the other method that one might use is that of resignation or acquiescence. But I think that is just as bad as violence, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good.
When I hear the young people around this table talk about their experiences, it violates my belief in what America can be. To hear young people feeling marginalized and distrustful even after they've done everything right.
Heat from the quote black community last week for criticizing shooting at police and firefighters and shooting up their vehicles and shooting two cops, and FBI just got shot, and all sorts of stuff happened. That makes protesting look bad. And Time magazine came out and said violent riots necessary, close quote. What, burning down your own neighborhood? So here's the big question. When is it right to have a violent revolution, and then who do you target?
Now, everybody knows that the civil rights movement in the South professed nonviolence, that people were taught to cover their heads when the white mobs came to beat them up, and to just endure the spitting, the beating, and so forth. But violence, the violence of the white mob was being used strategically in those demonstrations. So, look, it's partly a problem of almost strategy and propaganda. You know, it's a violent country. It's a violent government. It's killing people. And they're going to call us violent if we break a window. But they will do that. So probably, unless you have good reason for breaking the window, probably you shouldn't do that. Unless it's, you know, a big part of your strategy.
Hello, I'm Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General of the United Nations. We must disarm to save lives. We must disarm so that we can redirect precious resources to health, education, and development.
And what we need to do is change the way in which people think about guns, especially young people. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Nothing will move until everybody knows or has a family member who has been gunned down by a gun accident in this country. Okay. Is that when it will, the attitude will change?
If I could have gotten 51 votes in the Senate of the United States for an outright ban, picking up every one of them, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, I would have done it.
One who believes in nonviolence must recognize the dimensions of evil within human nature. And there is a danger that one can indulge in a sort of superficial optimism, thinking man is all good. Man does not only have the greater capacity for goodness, but there is also the potential for evil.
Police in St. Louis say they've arrested two juveniles and are looking for two other suspects after a Bosnian man was beaten to death with hammers.
Right after black people running up and down the street yelling, F the white people, kill the white people.
I tell you, I'm already mad about you slant-eyed folks here anyway.
Why? People like you, that's what's wrong with them. That's what's wrong with the United States.
People
think
people
just like you.
People like you is what's wrong.
No.
Andrew didn't want to show his face today because it looks worse than these pictures. He says the next thing he remembers is waking up in an ambulance. His girlfriend says the men attacked him and that they wouldn't stop.
I was trying to pry them off before I knew it, he was on the floor. It happened all so quickly.
So you think that these guys had a problem with Andrew because he was dating an African-American?
Yeah, definitely. That's simple.
Even going back to slavery, how much white people just absolutely hated black people without a cause. They were hating black people even though they was getting free labor out of black people. They hated black people for no reason. You go all the way up into the Klansman days, they hated black people. Black people had not done anything to whites. They hated them. You look at the civil rights movement, the way they were sicking dogs on them, lynching black people for no apparent reason. The hate is just sickening when you watch it. I mean, I almost get ill. I get so pissed off when I watch the way that white races hated blacks back then, and blacks hadn't done anything to them but be black. But now we have a new kind of hatred. It's the way that black people hate white people. And I've paid attention to this over the years. In the last 4 years, I've always said this, but even before Barack Obama got in office, but it has just manifested itself. The type of hate, when you talk to blacks, the type of hate they have towards whites, for no reason, you ask them, has any white ever done you like this? The amount of hate they have for whites, for no reason, is unprecedented, is ungodly, it's sickening. And it reminds you of the day when the Klan hated black people.
There is inevitably going to be some negative reaction, and it'll make for good TV.
All kinds of things I can't even say on TV because the left does not want black conservatives to be vocal. I wrote Blacklash to expose the failures of the progressives and also to push back on the black liberal establishment whose message is about wealth redistribution and race baiting. Here we have the MSNBC characters like Torre and Al Sharpton who were spewing this nonsense daily and nightly on this network, and it's absolutely outrageous.
Joining me now is Touré and Michelle Bernard. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
Touré, what do you think of this?
Well, you know, when they talk about entitlements, I find it very offensive because they're talking about, it's a coded way of saying welfare, of saying gifts, right? They talked about freebies there.
Coded?
Barely coded.
I thought it was pretty blatant.
Absolutely.
The foundation of this country is racism and white supremacy, and we are, all of our institutions uphold that.
Depressing.
And because of the systematic racism that we have in our state government,
and our state party. And I have to tell you, this is St. Louis's race war. We didn't have a race war like other cities throughout the country. This is our race war.
In things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
See, now, as long as they kill us and go to Wendy's and have a burger and go to sleep, they're going to keep killing us. But when we die and they die, then soon we're going to sit at a table and talk about retired. We want some of this earth, or we'll tear this damn country up.
Obama has done good things as president. Most of us don't notice those things because he has done them under the radar. We have this governmental structure. You can't wish it away by hoping for somebody who has passion, who has left convictions, who is this or who is that. We got Obama. Not bad. Not bad at all.
It seems to me that there are three ways that oppressed people can deal with their oppression.
What are they, Dr. King?
Well, one is to rise up in open violence, in physical violence. And some persons have used that method, persons who have been oppressed. But I think the danger of that method is its futility. I feel that violence creates many more social problems than it solves.
For all of recorded history, civilizations around the world praised the health benefits of silver. At InfoWars Life, our mission is to bring you the highest quality, purest, cleanest, effective colloidal silver on the market today for the lowest price available. You don't have to be a doctor to know. The fall and winter months are the most dangerous time of year in North America when it comes to you and your family's health. InfoWarsLife.com is very excited to announce our biggest run yet of Silver Bullet Colloidal Silver, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Now, InfoWarsLife.com has taken colloidal silver to the next level using a cutting-edge technique that is free of toxic artificial additives. Now more than ever, it's important to stock up on high-quality Silver Bullet from InfoWarsLife.com and to help others during Christmas by teaching them about the powerful benefits of silver. Secure your Silver Bullet today at InfoWarsLife.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139.
The average person's life is filled with unexpected challenges. Unlock the energy it takes to defeat these daily beasts with Super Male or Super Female Vitality, specifically designed to assist the body in regulating proper hormone balance to create superior vitality in males and females. Supercharge and conquer your world at InfoWarsLife.com or call 1-888-253-3139.
Introducing the first proprietary oxygen-based intestinal cleanser, OxyPowder, backed by FDA-approved phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials. All the toxins from the air, the food, the water, ultimately ends up in the gut or affects the gut. Take your health into your own hands and start cleansing your body today with OxyPowder. Secure your OxyPowder today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
Today I'm speaking with Carol Everett. She is a former abortion clinic director who ran four facilities in the Dallas-Fort Worth area between 1977 and 1983. Everett says that she oversaw approximately 35,000 abortions in those years before she changed her position on the issue. Now, Everett went on to found the Heidi Group, and it's a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to helping girls and women in unplanned pregnancies make positive, life-affirming choices. And now she really strives to educate the public on the current abortion industry's tactics, which she says includes using underhanded tactics to infiltrate public schools, get into these kids' minds at a very young age, targeting your children to be potential clients for the abortion industry. And here's how they do it. Well, Carol, thank you so much for joining the show today and help to get the truth out there. Now, you were working in the industry for about 6 years, quite some time. What happened to change your mind?
Well, we were maiming or killing one woman a month. One woman a month was having a hysterectomy, a colostomy, and one woman bled to death. Never had a lawsuit, and I was struggling with that. I was supposed to be helping women, but I was hurting women, and I was praying. And out of the clear blue sky, although it was not the clear blue sky, I met a man who told me that Jesus Christ died for my sins and I could have peace and eternal life. I accepted him as my Savior, and I accepted him, and my life changed instantly. And I left the abortion industry.
And now you're out blowing the whistle on the on an industry that you say uses tactics to ensure a steady stream of clients are constantly coming into the clinics and basically going out to public schools to create this steady stream of clients. What are some of these tactics being used? And kind of talk to me about that.
Well, I want you to think of this as a business. Mm-hmm. People don't think of it as a business, but they have to expand their market. And who is their market? It's the woman who's having an abortion. And so who is the longest-term customer for an abortion clinic? It's a woman early in her teens who is going to continue using abortion as a method of birth control throughout her childbearing years. So they go into the schools with our goal was 3 to 5 abortions between the ages of 13 and 18. But you cannot just go to these kids when they're 12 and say, I want you to start getting pregnant. So what we did was we worked to create our market by breaking down the natural modesty, separating the children from their parents and their values, and becoming a sexpert in their lives. We were the ones to give them all the information about sex. And so it starts in kindergarten, simple things like putting the children in a room and asking them what their parents say to call their private parts. And, you know, by the time you reach the third or fourth one, because each family has a different name for the private parts, the children are pretty certain their parents don't know what they have. But we did, and we shared, boys, this is what you have, girls, this is what you have. They would be sharing first, second, third grade. The agenda is intercourse. Fourth grade, it's masturbation. Masturbate alone until you're comfortable, and then in groups of 4 or 5 the same sex, and we wonder why the homosexual lifestyle is exploding. And then in the 5th and 6th grade, I came in, and my goal was to get these kids sexually active. And so we passed out condoms at the back door, defective condoms or second condoms. These people don't buy the most expensive or the best condom. They buy seconds or defective. We knew they wouldn't work. And then we got the girls into the clinic. We gave them a low-dose birth control pill that we absolutely knew she would get pregnant on. And you're going to say, how did you know that? Mm-hmm. We gave those girls, we prescribed a pill that in order to provide any level of protection had to be taken accurately at the same time every day. We knew there's not a teenager in the world that does anything at the same time every day. She wouldn't take the pill properly. Her sexual activity would increase from 0 or 1 a week to 5 to 7 times a week. She would become pregnant, and she would call us. And we were ready with people answering our telephones, trained as telemarketers to sell her an abortion on the telephone.
Wow.
I held the hand of one young woman while she had her 9th abortion. Abortion is a method of birth control today.
Right. That is just so shocking that they would go in there knowing these low-dose birth control pills are going to basically set these girls up to fail. I can't believe that. So who's setting these goals? Who is saying 3 to 5, and then we want you to go in and here, take this pamphlet to separate these children from the authority of their parents, and we're going to be the authority now. Who is overseeing that? I mean, was that you as the clinic director? I mean, where were those orders coming down from?
Those were the goals of our clinic. Mm-hmm. We knew that our goal, now let's back up a little bit. My commission was $25. My goal was 40,000 abortions a year so I could be a millionaire.
Wow.
The last month I was there, we did 545. My income was $13,625. The abortionists make a third of the fee in the first trimester and 50% of the fee in the second and third trimester. So a first trimester abortionist will do 10 to 12 abortions an hour. Let's just say the cheapest abortion out there now is about $300. The average is $500. So let's just use the $300 figure. A third of the fee, 10 to 12 an hour, moving girls from one room to the other so he can run across using 2 rooms of 2 assistants. He can go in one room, do that abortion, run across the hall, no surgical scrub, No operative notes. Just change gloves, do abortion number two. We can run back across the hall, do $10 to $12, $100, $1,000, $1,200 an hour with a benefit that you and I do not share. We did not want to be responsible for any portion of our abortionist malpractice insurance. They were not employees. They were independent contractors. We paid them in cash at the end of the day, no 1099, no W-2, left entirely to the discretion of that person killing babies for a living, what they report to IRS. This is still the largest unregulated legal industry in our nation today, second only to illegal drugs. Because it's all mostly cash business, no one can tell how many abortions are really performed. And in 1988, C. Everett Koop and Dr. Vincent Rue did a study that showed that 50% of abortions were reported in this nation. We don't know how many babies die every day.
Wow. That's just incredible to me. Now, you all were going to public schools, and we're seeing a lot of, you know, reports coming out. We'll just talk about New York specifically. Basically, in 2012, more abortions were performed on black women than black children were born. In New York, minorities, black and Hispanic people, made up about 78% of all the abortions. And now today, without a hint of irony, Planned Parenthood is joining the Ferguson protesters with their hashtag Black Lives Matter protest. So Planned Parenthood, who's out here, is seemingly targeting black and Hispanic minority groups. And so I just want, I mean, I've got you here. Were they specifically targeting minority groups here in the public schools to get them to become these repeat clients?
We just have to look at where their facilities are located.
Right.
And until recently, there was not a single abortion clinic located in a white middle-class area. They were all located in black areas. In 1984, Planned Parenthood came to San Antonio, Texas, and hired a Hispanic marketing firm to learn how to market to the Hispanic population, i.e., the fastest growing in the nation and the fastest growing in the abortion numbers and in the teen pregnancy numbers. So they, in 1984, recognized that they had almost saturated the black community. And then on the East Coast, 2 out of 3 abortions are on black women. 2 out of 3. And so they had that saturated and started on the Hispanic population, and now they are moving into the white and Hispanic neighborhoods with abortion facilities and with their family planning facilities that act as I did, you know, the low-dose birth control pills. I don't have any documentation on Planned Parenthood. Let me say that as a disclaimer. I can't prove that this is what they're doing, but this is what I believe they're doing. Exactly what we did, the low-dose birth control pills, to create their market.
Another,
and it's even worse. They are using government money to do it.
Right.
7 years ago, they got $368 million. Last year, they got $542 million. No, 2 years ago, they got $542 million. Last year, they got $540.6 million. And Cecile Richards just sent out a letter, a fundraising letter, saying we can depend on Obama to help us. We have a friend in the White House.
Right, exactly. He said that Obamacare wouldn't be used to fund abortions, but now we have a map that shows the states that are getting this funding, are receiving this funding. So we know that that is not the case. And a lot of people were really upset about that. And he assured everyone that Obamacare would not be used to fund abortions. Now, something else that a lot of reporting that we've been doing, the mandatory reporting law. So these abortion clinics, they have a duty to report if a young girl comes in, I guess under the age of 12, very young, 12 years old, or maybe even younger.
States it's different, but, you know, in Texas it's 14.
Mm. And so basically you'll have a young child come in. She doesn't have to report to her parents. No one can know that she's brought in. Meanwhile, maybe she's being brought in by the father or the stepfather or the pimp who has been raping her, or that's why she got pregnant. And they're not doing the mandatory reporting because these children are continuing to be abused. They come in for multiple abortions by the same person. So what's the deal there? How can you say you're trying to help these kids when you're overlooking crime?
Let me just go back and say they're returned to their abuser.
Right, exactly.
The person that's abusing them, not a person that's trying to help them.
Right.
And what we've got to recognize is abortionists kill babies. Do we really expect them to follow the laws that we put in place? No, we can't. If they kill babies, they will compromise, they will lie, they will do anything. Trust me, if we had one woman die and 19 maimed at the point of major surgery and not one lawsuit, who lied there? We did. We told the woman it was her fault. And that woman is so traumatized, she's not going to look for any help. And these poor girls, these 12-year-olds, these 10-year-olds, these children that are being sexually abused have no opportunity to tell anyone. They actually, we've seen all these statistics. We know that what they do is they blame themselves, and then you put the added burden of an abortion on her and knowing that she's part of killing her own child. That person is so traumatized, she's not going to reach out for help. And yet it goes on because abortionists will lie to anyone. And only when we catch them, only when we have the fortune to catch one of those people doing, one of those clinics abusing that child too, are we able to know the truth. But the truth of the matter is, if it's, we're catching it one time, how many times is it happening even today?
Right, exactly. We've got a report there just showing in all the cases of these young girls who are coming back for continual abortions, and then the clinic, they're just sending them off with the pedophile, with their stepfather who's been raping them. And now, you know, you're telling me that they are getting a commission for doing that quick little 6-minute interview of how did this happen and what's your health and does your mom know? And then also too, brainwashing them into thinking that these doctors are their only outlet to talk about their sexuality and talk about what's going on with them. And then here, the clinic is just putting them right back and not even telling the parents or the police that they're required to do by law.
Or think about it. I believe it's a law in the case of rape or incest that you actually produce the specimen. Okay, they're getting rid of that baby. Those products of conception mean nothing to them, so they're putting that little baby down the dark garbage disposal. They're disposing of the evidence. They're crime upon crime here.
Right. Absolutely.
And abusing these poor girls unmercifully.
It's a shame. Well, talk to me a little bit about the Heidi Group and what you all have been able to do to reduce the number of abortions, to help young girls out there find some alternatives.
The Heidi Group is an education agency. We help educate on any level. We help educate the girl who's considering abortion. We help educate in schools with the truth. And we educate legislators who do not know, just as you didn't, Leanne, what's really going on inside the abortion industry. And so what we have seen is when the legislators in Texas understood that the abortion industry was abusing young women at a secondary standard of care for women who chose abortion, they regulated the abortion clinics in Texas, and we have seen a decrease of about 50% in the last year. And the law has not even been in effect a full year yet. And yet our pregnancy centers are saving about 40,000 babies a year. We had one center last month save 19 babies. Now, think of that. That is a kindergarten class saved in one pregnancy center in Texas last month. We are so excited because the women who were determined to have an abortion, the abortion-determined woman, is coming into our pregnancy centers, our life-affirming pregnancy centers, hearing the truth and choosing life. So we are thrilled to death that the truth is working, and when women hear the truth, women make wise choices.
Right.
And, you know, the abortion industry is always saying we insult the woman by not allowing her to have an abortion. They insult the woman by lying to her about what an abortion really is. We are telling her the truth, and she's making educated choices of life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We're definitely going to get you back in studio for a much longer report. You've really blown the whistle on this industry that is taking advantage of these young girls, turning them into a constant stream of revenue, and then, you know, filling them with a lifetime of guilt, possibly making up to where they can't even have children in the future if they, you know, survive the procedure at all. So it is horrendous, but we thank you for what you're doing, and we'll have you back real soon.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Have a wonderful Christmas season.
You too. Well, that's it for the show tonight. If you are watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, become a subscriber to the Alex Jones YouTube channel, and then head over to Infowars.com. You're going to see up on the top right corner that we are running some mega Christmas specials. Go to the Infowars store. We're going to have free shipping on everything and a lot of our products, 30% off, 20% off, buy two, $15 off, buy four, get one free. Running some really good specials there. We have heard your cries. Go ahead and pick something up for the holidays. They make excellent stocking stuffers. That's it for the show tonight, and we will see you here again tomorrow at 7 p.m. Central.
Celebrate the spirit of freedom and liberty upon which our nation was founded at InfoWarsShop.com. Molon Lave is ancient Greek for come and take it. This popular design combines both classic Greek Spartan imagery with modern M16 assault rifles. Now available in women's tees and proudly made in the USA. Celebrate the spirit of 1776 with the George Washington brass belt buckle or this incredibly sharp-looking 1776 hat. Badass. And be sure to check out the new arrivals at InfoWars Life, where you can prepare your body to perform at peak levels with Survival Shield, Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, and Fluoride Shield. And wake up, America. Immune Support Blend is the healthy choice for the gourmet coffee lover. So get incredibly high-quality, freedom-based products and help fund the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.